Almost 3,400 years ago, the Israelite nation stood at a crossroads of history, and they were readying themselves to enter into the promised land. But let's just review what had happened to them. They had completed almost 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, which was a punishment for complaining against God. We read in Numbers 13 and 14 how spies were sent into Canaan to spy out the land. And when the spies came back, the spies brought a wonderful report, except the report wasn't so good. Some of the spies said, "This land is tremendous. It is a perfect place for us to live. But the people that live there are strong and powerful. How in the world are we, this little nation of Israel, we're not even skilled at fighting, how are we going to overcome all those mighty people that live in the land? And some of them are giants." That was 40 years previous to what we're talking about right here. And in doing so, the people at this point in time began to say amongst themselves, "This is an impossible situation. How are we possibly going to go into the land of Canaan?" And then they said, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." What an idea. Two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, began to talk to the people in this way. And we read in Numbers 14, this is what Joshua and Caleb said. "The land which we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land." A very good description of the land that they were going to, the land of Canaan. "If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." So Joshua and Caleb are explaining to the people what they had seen and what they were looking for. And what was the people's response? In the very next verse, in Numbers 14, verse 10, "But all the congregation said to stone them with stones." The people had a complaining spirit against God. These people said, "We're afraid of going into this land." And then, in the very next breath, we read, "Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel." It's not impossible for us to imagine that people become disenchanted with their leaders, and they go into the streets and riot and complain against the leadership. And in this point of history, we have seen this happen several times in this recent year in countries such as Egypt and Tunisia and even in Libya, where people have gone out to the streets and talked evil against the leaders who were leading them. And they have grumbled and complained about what was happening in their nations. I don't want to equate what is happening in the world today to the situation that was happening in Israel at this time. The children of Israel were behaving in much the same way as we see in today's society, but they were behaving in a very different way, because what they were doing was speaking against the men that God had established as leaders. And these people also were speaking against the God who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. And so their crime against their leaders, their complaints against their leaders, had no legitimacy. There was nothing for them to complain about because they had been led every step of the way by God Himself and by Moses and Aaron, who were the appointed leaders on this earth. And so that was a situation 40 years prior to when the people were ready to enter into the land of Canaan. They were not dealing with a dictator like the dictators we see in these countries. They were dealing with the Almighty God. They were complaining against God. And at this point, we read in Numbers some more things. Now, this happened. Moses, the Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people spurn me? And how long will they not believe in me despite all the signs which I have performed in their midst? I will smite them with pestilence and dispossess them. I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than them." And so God had a response. And in this response, the people of Israel were complaining against Moses and Aaron. Moses and Aaron were fallen prostrate down on the ground before the people and before God. And God came down to earth in all His glory above the tabernacle. He exposed Himself to some degree that frightened the people. And God was ready to teach them, to punish them for what they had done. And Moses interceded with God on the people's behalf. And God relented. And what God did is He told the people this: according to the number of days when you spied out the land, 40 days, and for every day you will bear your guilt a year, even 40 years, and you will know my opposition. I, the Lord, have spoken. Surely this I will do to all this evil congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be destroyed, and there they will die. What God did is punish the people of Israel so that they would have to wander in the wilderness as sheep herders for 40 years. And any person who was 20 years and older was going to die in the wilderness. And so God had many things that He had taught them over these 40 years. And as the Israelites stood at the end of 40 years, they were ready to enter into the land of Canaan, because at that time there was hardly anybody alive who really remembered what God had done in Egypt, unless they had been a youth. And only Joshua and Caleb were older than 60 years old. And Moses, at this time, was 120 years old, a very old man. However, the Bible tells us that his strength was not diminished. He was a very healthy 120-year-old, if you can imagine. And he was twice the age as almost every Israelite. And so at this precipice in history, the people of Israel are preparing to enter the land of Canaan. They had gone through 40 years of testing and training and just learning more and more about what it was to serve the God that they were following. And they had seen their parents die in the wilderness. They were ready to enter into the land of Canaan. And so what is Moses going to do? He knows that he is not permitted to enter into the land of Canaan. He was an old man, and God had given him a very fruitful life. And he was going to talk to the people about what they were to do and to teach them and remind them what he had taught them over many years. And so that's what the book of Deuteronomy is all about. It's really kind of like Moses' farewell sermons. And it's several sermons in the book of Deuteronomy in which he is just reviewing with the people all those things that he had taught them over the course of the previous 40 years. Moses wasn't just one extraordinary gentleman. He wasn't a genius of a leader. Well, he was. But he also was an instrument of God. And the words that he spoke here are words that were written for us. They're just as real today as they were back then. And if you were standing there in front of Moses as he spoke to his people, those words had as much relevance for you as they do for us today. And we're just going to take a look at a few of his words that he spoke and the words that had impact on how it is that we are to teach and train our children through the family in the form of family worship. Let's take a look in our Bibles at this time and read a few passages that are appropriate to teaching us about what to do in our families. Let's turn in our Bibles to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy 6. We'll read verses 1 through 9, and then we will read verses 20 through 25. Deuteronomy 6, 1. Now this is the commandment, the statutes, the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, so that you and your son and your grandson might fear the Lord your God, to keep his statutes and his commandments which I command you all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. O Israel, you should listen and be careful to do it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, just as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has promised you, in a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words, which I am commanding you today, shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk to them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And let's skip down to verse 20. When your son asks you in time to come, saying, what do the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments mean which the Lord our God commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord brought us from Egypt with a mighty hand. Moreover, the Lord showed us great and distressing signs and wonders before our eyes against Egypt, Pharaoh and all his household. He brought us up from there in order to bring us in, to give us the land which he had sworn to our fathers. So the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always and for our survival, as it is today. It will be righteousness for us if we are careful to observe all this commandment before the Lord our God, just as he commanded us. And so how is Moses instructing his people? And before we begin, listen to how Moses is addressing the people. He is addressing them personally. He isn't giving them some theological dissertation. He is talking directly to the people of Israel. He's using the personal pronoun you. He's saying, when you get in your land, here's what you need to do. You need to remember the commandments and the statutes. Here's what you are going to talk to your son and your grandson about. And so he's talking directly to the people of Israel, just as he is talking to us today in this message that he's giving to us. And so what is he directing us to do? First of all, he's directing us to teach our children. What are we supposed to do? We're supposed to teach our children. But what are we supposed to teach our children? Well, we read in Deuteronomy 6, verse 1, which we just read, "Now this is a commandment, the statutes and the judgments which the Lord your God has commanded me to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you are going over to possess it, and that you and your son and grandson may trust the Lord." So what are we to teach our children? We are to teach them the statutes and the judgments. Now, what are those statutes and judgments? Well, let's go back a chapter in Deuteronomy to chapter 5. And if we look at chapter 5, Deuteronomy 5, hopefully will ring the bell for you. Deuteronomy 5 is the Ten Commandments. And listen how Moses begins the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy 5, because this is part of his sermon to the people of Israel as they're standing in the plains of Moab, and where he's giving his series of sermons, his farewell sermons to the people as they are getting ready to go into the land of Canaan. And so here's what Moses said. "Then Moses summoned all Israel and said to them, 'Hear, O Israel.'" Okay, so this is important. He's really calling attention. "Listen up," he's saying. "Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances which I'm speaking today in your hearing, that you may learn them and observe them carefully. The Lord our God has made a covenant with us at Horeb. The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, with all those of us alive here today." Now, I think that the majority of the people who he was speaking to at that time were not the people who heard the words of the Ten Commandments thundering from Mount Sinai, where they actually heard the voice of God. Most of the people standing before Moses at this time had not physically heard the voice of God. But Moses is saying, this covenant was not just for your fathers who heard these words at Mount Sinai. This covenant is for us today. It's between God and you today, even though you weren't there when they were given. In the same way, these words are given to us today, the Ten Commandments. And Moses acknowledges that these are for all the living, and we are to hear them, and they are of enduring value. All of these commandments are, and they are to be studied. And these are the statutes that we are to teach our children. They are the statutes which we are to teach ourselves and remind ourselves of. If we read again in Deuteronomy 5, verse 29, and Moses is saying, "Oh, that they had such a heart in them, that they would fear me and keep," and this is God speaking, "that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it may be well with them and their sons forever." And so the Ten Commandments have enduring value. And Moses recognized this. And God, through Moses, communicated through Moses that the Ten Commandments And the what they teach us are things that we are to teach our children. And so that was Moses' point. What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to teach your children the Ten Commandments. And so do you study the Ten Commandments and what they mean? I mean, there's been all kinds of issues with Ten Commandments being posted here and there. They have been the basis of our laws for many years. And the Ten Commandments are something that are enduring today. And they are ways that God wants us to use in order to order our lives. And we use them to teach our children what is right and what is wrong, because they are very clear, especially based on the words of Jesus. When we read in the Sermon on the Mount, where he expounded some of these Ten Commandments and broadened their meaning so that they mean a lot more than thou shalt not murder. They mean you shouldn't murder people in your mind. And the anger that you have towards other people should not be an anger that burns against them. That too is a sin. And these are things that we will teach our children. But secondly, Moses is teaching that his children another thing. And if we read in Deuteronomy 6, verse 5, we read a very interesting little section here. Verses 5 and 6 is called the Shema, from the Hebrew word to hear. And so we start with verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Verses 4 and 5. This very simple confession has been used for centuries by the Jewish people. They wake up in the morning and they will recite these words. When they're going to bed, these are the words that they will recite. And if you ask an Orthodox Jewish person and you ask them about this, they say they use this in their own personal life and they use it in their temples. It's part of their worship. And what is Moses teaching his people? He's teaching them about God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. This was a contrast to all the other cultures around them, especially where they came from in Egypt. The Egyptians have maybe 2,000 gods. Every town had its own god. Then there were those national gods. And then if you had a particular problem, you would go to that god who could take care of that problem. And so Egyptians had a number of gods. Hear, O Israel, you only have one god. I'm going into Canaan. You're going into Canaan. They have gods over there. And they worship their gods in some very strange ways. Very evil ways. That's not your God. Your God is one God. Remember that. And so when we are instructing our children, we want to instruct them who God is and what he is like. The words here are much simpler in the Hebrew than they are in our English language. In the Hebrew, the translation is, if we did it very literally, it says, Yahweh, which is the name for Jehovah, our God, Jehovah, one. So it really was only four words, four utterances. Jehovah is our God, and Jehovah is one God. Very simple. How often do we fight against the gods of materialism, the gods of humanism, the gods of all kinds of manufactured belief systems? And yet we have a God who is one. Our God is one. But then he goes on and he says, here, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. It's very interesting to me that this particular statement mentions love. It doesn't say, which maybe I would have thought so, especially remembering 40 years ago how God had given such a harsh punishment to the Israelites, which they well deserved because of all their grumbling and complaining against God. But he's saying, not you shall fear the Lord your God, which is a true statement. But he says, you shall love the Lord your God. How do you come from fear, which I'm sure the Israelites 40 years ago feared the Lord, especially when they had complained against Moses and Aaron, had threatened to stone them, and God came down in all his power that they could see this happening. I am sure that their feeling was not a feeling of love towards God, but it was a fear, and a terror of what God could do for them and to them. But now Moses is instructing them to love God. What has happened? How are we going to teach children to love God? And so what had happened in the intervening 40 years? God had been faithfully caring for his people. And just for example, he had provided them with manna for all of 40 years. They had enough food to eat every single day out of the 40 years. And when the people got tired of manna, and I don't know how people couldn't get tired of eating the same thing every day, and even though they prepared it in all different ways, when they got tired of manna, God gave them other food from time to time. We hear about quails, and we hear about them giving them water, and we hear how God provided for his people. And so what it was is that God showed his faithfulness to the people, even though the people from time to time grumbled against God. And God had to show them that, no, Moses and Aaron are the men that I have put in charge. And God had to show them, even though when you go astray, I am going to bring you back. But God had been faithful and loving towards his people. And so over these years, God, through Moses and Aaron, had been teaching the people of Israel how to love the Lord their God. So when Moses is giving his farewell sermon 40 years after they started their wanderings in the wilderness, he could tell them, love the Lord your God, because he had taught them through that time what it meant to love the Lord your God. That's something that we should be doing. We should be teaching our families. We should be learning ourselves what it means to love the Lord our God. And why is it that we love the Lord our God? Because we must have reasons to love. And it's because God first loved us. And because he first loved us, he saved us and reconciled us to him, even though we are unholy and we are sinful. That's why we love our Lord or God. We know a lot more about God than Moses did at this time, than the people of Israel knew at that time. They knew they had been saved from enemies from time to time. They knew that they had been brought out of Egypt at that time. They knew a lot of things about God. But we know so much more about what God has done for us. And so we need to teach our children not only what God has done for us in the generic sense, but what God has done for us specifically. There are points in each one of our lives where we could see the hand of God protecting us, the hand of God guiding us in all different situations. And we should be looking to identify those things. Things just don't happen. Things happen for a purpose. And the purpose is because of the Lord our God. That's how we worship God in our families. We worship God by teaching our families what it means to love the Lord our God. But then secondly, Moses instructs us to tell our children. I spent a little bit of time at the beginning telling you about the story of the children of Israel and why they're standing in front of Moses, and why is Moses giving a farewell speech, and what they had done 40 years prior so that they ended up wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. And why am I telling you this story? Because that's what Moses is telling us to do. When we read in Deuteronomy 6, verse 20, we read this. When your son asks you in time to come, saying, "What do the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments mean which the Lord our God commanded you?" Then you will say to your son, and here's what you're going to say to your son, "We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt." And so the father is able to tell his son a story. Now, the father was probably not in Egypt at that time. Very few people were when Moses was speaking to them. But he has a story that was passed down from generation to generation. And even as God told Moses to afflict the Egyptians with plagues, if we look at plague number 8, which was the plague of locusts, then the Lord said to Moses, "Go to Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may perform these signs of mine among them." And this is kind of like the repeating language for every single plague. And this particular plague, the instructions to Moses add something. "And that you may tell in the hearing of your son and of your grandson how I made a mockery of the Egyptians, and how I perform my signs among them, that you may know that I am the Lord." And so already, Moses had just arrived on the scene, and he was interacting with the Pharaoh, and God was instructing Moses what to say to the Pharaoh. God already had in mind for Moses to remember that these stories were stories that were going to be told from generation to generation. We still tell these stories today, don't we? The Bible has stories in it that we need to teach our children, that we need to learn ourselves. Because they have enduring value. They tell us about what God has done for his people. These are the stories and the things that we want to impart in our families. They are part of family worship. Because God not only has told us a story because it's a good story, And many of these are good stories. They have all the elements of what a good story is. But they also include lessons for us on how God interacts with his people and what he has done for his people. We talk about the mighty acts of God. Does your family know what some of the mighty acts of God are? Do you know what they are? Are you familiar with Bible stories? With the things that the Bible teaches about? Do you know about how Daniel behaved or Ruth? And those are pretty common stories. But do you know some of the other stories that we read about in the scriptures? Pastor had a story today about Samson. There are a tremendous amount of lessons that we can learn from Samson and from all those stories in the book of Judges, which sometimes we don't like to read about. But there are many things in the scriptures that are stories that can be used in our everyday life. Just think about how Jesus instructed his people. He told stories, except we call them parables. Jesus used stories to illustrate what the Christian life was all about, the kingdom of heaven is like. We read, it's like this, and he gives an analogy. All those stories are meant for us to learn and learn out, and they should be part of how we handle our personal worship in our own families. And then, lastly, are you teaching your children and grandchildren as you live your life? Is that how you are telling your children? And look at Deuteronomy 6, verse 6. Deuteronomy 6, verse 6. It says, these words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And then it goes on with some other things. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Now, when you're walking along the road, which I'm not sure many of you do, isn't that kind of like driving in your car? When you're driving in your car, are you talking about these things, the statutes and commandments that the Lord has given to us? It's an interesting concept. When you're walking by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up, when you are with your family doing those family things that families do in just your house, the chores that are done, the things that are done in your family, are you talking about these things? That's how we instruct and tell our children. That's how we communicate in our children. And in our society today, we have so much issues with having to fill in every single space of time with other things like music or talking on the radio or listening to TV. A lot of things are pulling us away from those times where we can have instructive times with our children and with other members of our family because we fill it in with other activities. But at this time, you're walking down the road, or maybe driving in your car, and your children are with you. What are you doing? You're trying to entertain your children? I see little TVs in cars now for the back seat. But isn't that a good time for instruction? Because here you are all in one place. You're going somewhere together. What do people think? They got to keep the kids quiet. No, you should be instructing them in the ways of the Lord. That's what Moses is telling us. And he says you should be putting things on the doorposts of your door. And then he says some kind of strange things that people have interpreted in different ways. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. And some people have taken this so literally in the Jewish culture that they've had little boxes tied on their arms and on their head during their time of prayer with little scripture verses in them. And so, but really what it means is that in your everyday activities, you should have some words from the scriptures that are ready for you. Maybe you can't remember them all, but at least you got them there. You can read them and remember them. Put them on your doorposts. People put them, they have things in their houses hanging on the walls, verses and so on. Those are the kinds of things that Moses is telling. You need to have reminders in your own home of what it means to serve God. And so that's what he is instructing us to do, because our entire life is trying to teach our children how to love God. And so as we close, let's remember we need to be able to teach our children. We need to be able to tell our children.